from the capital city of Charleston, West Virginia, this is Inside West Virginia Politics with Mark Curtis. Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
Hello and welcome to Inside West Virginia Politics. I'm Mark Curtis.
And I'm Amanda Barron. On the show this week, he came from a place where most of the work was underground, but Homer Hickam has made a name for himself when it comes to space.
Today, he's talking about our relationship with Russia and the International Space Station as the invasion of Ukraine continues.
But first, my one-on-one interview with Congresswoman Carol Miller, just back from a trip to the southern border. You described your trip as nothing short of heartbreaking, visiting the Del Rio Border Patrol Station, and you had an opportunity to see more of what is going on at the U.S.-Mexico border, and also what you say isn't happening at the border. Describe your trip to us.
We met with so many of the law enforcement officers, which is part of what is heartbreaking when you realize what they do when they go to work every day. And what they're exposed to, and the people, and the sadness, and the desperation of the people that are coming over. These are regular law enforcement officers who go to work every day doing their job, and they run into tragedy. One of them explained to me that probably the worst day that he'd ever had is when he had to not save, but retrieve a woman from Haiti who had died. She had drowned and she was pregnant with twins, and it really affected them. And then we went out into an area, a holding area. And when we went in there, there was a family, a mother, a father. The mother was holding a baby, and the most darling little girl is waving and smiling at us. These big eyes, just as cute as she could be. They were from Senegal, Africa. Can you imagine coming from the west coast of Africa to the United States to look for asylum?
Sure. And so your concern is not just for, you know, what the people who are working at the border, but also for these people who are making a very dangerous journey. You know, the president did talk about the border during the State of the Union address. Was it enough for you? Were you surprised to hear him talk about it? And what's your message to him now that you've seen it with your own eyes?
Well, talk is cheap. What I want to see is action. We need to have a good, solid border. You know, we haven't talked about the drugs that go along with this and the human trafficking. The human trafficking is probably the most lucrative thing they're doing right now. In 1 week, they can make $24 million in human trafficking.
And this is something, you know, when there will be some people who say, well, why does a congresswoman from West Virginia need to travel hundreds of miles, more than 1,000 miles to the border? And to those folks, you say that is one of the reasons, the human trafficking. But I would imagine the other response there is when it comes to the drug trafficking as well.
Absolutely. When you look at the fentanyl, and, you know, I think back to little tiny Kermit and when they were inundated with millions of oxycodone. Those just don't pop up. These things have been coming over, and the fentanyl that's being made in China, shipped to Mexico, and making its way. West Virginia is very sensitive to drug addiction. We've been ground zero, and we've been making terrific strides. When COVID hit and isolated people, it made it more difficult for people to get help, and it made them more desperate. A lot of them were having trouble holding jobs or whatever, and they were turning to drugs, and fentanyl kills. And we, you know, we've had to deal with this in our state. We still have to fight these drugs, and they need to have the manpower and they need to have the resources to keep that out of our country. I did get to see these huge towers that they have, which has been a real addition, because once they put the towers up and they could do surveillance and using, you know, various sensors or, you know, whatever you want to call the fancy things they do, they realized the number of people that were getting through that they had missed. And those are the bad guys. Sure. The ones that they are, you know, voluntarily coming to the border and saying, we want in, those aren't necessarily the bad people.
Yeah, they're the people that are sneaking through, you know, under that. Yes. We only have about 30 seconds left, and I do want to ask you, the president this week went ahead and said that he wanted to ban Russian oil. Your thoughts on that, coming and representing a state that is a place where energy, natural energy, is abundant?
Absolutely. Should have done it before. We should never be buying Russian oil. We can we have our own natural gas and oil right here in the United States, and we should be energy independent and thriving.
Congresswoman Absolutely. Carol Miller, I know you have votes to get to, and we certainly appreciate your time on a very busy day, and we hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you. Be glad to.
Thank Good you so much. You. Have a great day, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
Well, welcome back. He is an author, a veteran, a NASA engineer, maybe most importantly, a cat lover. I kid, but Homer Hickam is one of West Virginia's favorite sons, and he joins us today. Thank you so much for being with us, Homer. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Amanda.
It's my
always
pleasure.
Always good to talk to you.
Thank you. You too. I'm still lobbying for Jeff Bezos or Richard Branson or somebody to hear one of our interviews and get you up in outer space here before long. But I wanted to bring you on today because, of course, we want to talk about your time with NASA as an engineer and your thoughts right now on everything that is going on, because obviously the International Space Station is just that, international, and we have a little bit of politics going on when it comes to that. What are your thoughts as you're watching all of this unfold in Ukraine?
Well, I know that the folks that operate the International Space Station would love to avoid politics, but in fact, the ISS is a political instrument. The whole idea was to have a station in space with former enemies together, working together. And this has worked. We launched the space station back in 1998. So we're looking at over 20 some years of cooperation and operation. But unfortunately, now we are at a crossroads toward the end of the life of the station, in any case, where it looks like politics is naturally going to have to intrude. And more than likely, we're going to end up getting a divorce from the Russians.
What would you like to see, and what would your hope be moving forward? We are talking close quarters, and obviously the people who are there at the space station, you know, are removed from that, so to speak. But I think that what you're talking about when it comes to some of this is maybe the bigger picture in principle.
A lot of relationships have been built up between American and Russian mission controllers. But unfortunately, with the situation that it is today, I think that, we can't really decommission the space station. It'd probably take 2 or 3 years to do it safely. So the main thing right now is to avoid the optics of American and Russians just being all friendly and hugging up and all that kind of thing, while the Russian government is killing innocent men, women, and children in Ukraine. So I think we're going to have to work in a very professional way together. Enemies who cooperate, but we don't show a great deal of friendship and happiness in our work in space.
And in your recently released memoir, Don't Blow Yourself Up, you talk about some of this and about how, you know, any agreements of the past. I want to read exactly what you said. You said that negotiating with the Russians on the International Space Station in Moscow has some relevance to today's situation. There are good people, but this cruel, illegal war outweighs any past agreements or friendships. Is it sad for you as someone who's been a part of all of this to see it come to this? I mean, I know it's very sad on the surface, but there must be an emotional toll just based on your history with NASA.
Yeah, it is painful. And I know it's painful for the 20 some years of other folks who've worked with the Russians now having to leave them. But the Russians are headed up a fellow by the name of Dmitry Rogozin, and he has made no secret about being totally in favor of the Ukrainian invasion. He's made all kinds of threats to destroy the space station, even to the point of threatening nuclear war. So I don't think that we have any choice but to use the space station as a lever For diplomacy, and what I would recommend is that the vice president, who's the head of the National Space Council, call together all the other International Space Station partners, get together and decide what we're going to do about the Russians, and probably we'll end up inviting them off the station. And when they refuse to go, we'll probably have to say, well, all right, we're going to decommission the space station, which is kind of old and creaky anyway. And we're going to let it go.
Well, Homer Hickam, we always appreciate your perspective. It's always my honor to get a chance to talk with you. You can get his book on his website, Don't Blow Yourself Up. That and many others on the website, also on Amazon. I hope you'll come back. Thank you so much.
Anytime, Amanda. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Homer Hickam, everyone. We'll be right back.
Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
Well, greetings, everyone, on Inside West Virginia Politics. We're in Morgantown this week with some exciting news and update on the WVU Medicine Children's Hospital project. I want to introduce a friend of the program, been on a number of times, Amy Bush, who's the chief operating officer for WVU Medicine Children's Hospital. Great to have you on the program
today. Thank you so much, Mark.
The reason we're here is the annual Mediathon this week, sponsored in part by Nexstar Media, all of our television stations serving West Virginia. That's the star of the show behind us here, the new Children's Hospital building. Not finished, but boy, have we come a long way. Give us an update on where things stand.
Yeah, so we're really excited to get into our brand new free-leaning children's hospital later this year. It's all coming together, and the team is ready to roll. We just can't wait.
We'll give everybody a snapshot of what this was and what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Previously, the Children's Hospital was located on the sixth floor of Ruby Memorial mm-hmm. Hospital. You were sharing space. Mm-hmm. Basically, intermingling of patients could happen with adult patients and kids. Why is it so important to have a separate standalone facility just for the children mm-hmm. and in particular for their families as well?
In our new hospital, everything is our own, and it's an environment that is completely built, designed and built for the kids to create the ultimate healing environment. But not only the children will have an environment that's built to help the families heal, and also for the team to deliver the best care in the environment in which they're working. So we are connected, which is really important to our flagship adult hospital in the moments where we need to work together, traumas and other scenarios, but we're our own hospital so that it's actually an environment completely for the kids.
It's an exciting time for us at Nexstar because we've sponsored the Mediathon, I think 4 years running now. We were here when you turned over the first spades of dirt with Dr. Gee and the other
yes.
dignitaries. And then we were here for the topping out ceremony where the final beam was put on the top of the hospital. And now we're seeing the colors of hospital, children's, and the logo. And it's just, talk about the excitement of this.
Yeah, so, you know, every day I get a different text. Someone will shoot me a picture of their driving through and they haven't seen it in a while. The lights at night, the building, the whole building lights up. And it was an interesting story the other day. Someone was across the street running an errand and it was dark. And they said, oh my gosh, we saw these flashing lights in the sky. And it was the children's hospital and it dawned on them. So it's just a sign of how much the community, the state, and the region have supported us throughout all of this project and the excitement to have kids of this region, any kid who needs our care, be able to get that care in their own home state.
Talk about some of the medical procedures and the types of surgeries and other things we're going to have coming soon mm-hmm. that we haven't had previously, and what's the advantage of that?
We are the state's only level 4 neonatal ICU, taking care of the most vulnerable population. We also have the state's only pediatric heart program and ECMO, which many of us learned about during the COVID pandemic, which is, you know, that heart-lung machine that on the outside of the body that allows kids to heal. And we also have our epilepsy monitoring unit, which is unique for the state. All of that combined with all of our general surgery, minimally invasive surgery procedures, orthopedics, eye, ENT, make us a very subspecialized hospital so that we can be that hub when there's something that's really gone wrong, people can come here for care.
I want to talk about the psychological aspect of it. Mm-hmm. We're down to just a minute. Mm-hmm. Because hospitals can be intimidating for big mm-hmm. folks like you and me, mm-hmm. but for little kids, it can be really scary. And I would mm-hmm. imagine having the therapy dogs like mm-hmm. Tony and mm-hmm. Gus and some of the other just direct child care for those kids mm-hmm. is psychologically strengthening mm-hmm. to them and maybe eliminate some of the fear. You're mm-hmm. always going to have fear,
right.
but it helps abate it.
So one of the most important things is to have kids who don't plan on being sick have care in an environment that's as close to home-like as possible. And one of the things that our donors help us support is what we call child life, which is pet therapy, education, play, going with them to a procedure. And it's really, really important. And I would be also remiss, all around the state we have W Medicine Children's. It's not just here in Morgantown.
Exactly.
And so we have
good
people
point.
Caring for kids all over the state, whether it be clinics, emergency departments, or inpatient units. We just really appreciate the partnership.
Well, we want to mention the Mediathon wrapped up on Wednesday, but folks can still donate. You can go to WVUkids.com, mm-hmm. and donate to this very worthwhile project, the Children's Hospital here in Morgantown. We want to thank Amy Bush, the Chief Operating Officer, for joining
thank
us.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank
this
you
is,
so much.
I'm so excited. My
us
kids
too.
Are all grown up and gone. They won't be coming here, but a lot of other folks' kids and grandchildren will. So it's a great benefit to the state of West
Truly
Virginia.
Truly a legacy. Thank
yep.
you, Mark.
You're welcome. We'll have more of Inside West Virginia Politics after this break. Don't go away.
Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
I want to introduce Benjamin Krasna. He is the deputy head of mission for the country of Israel to the United States, based at the embassy in Washington, D.C. Benjamin, great to have you on the program.
Great to be here. Thank you.
You spent a couple days this past week in West Virginia, and why did you come here? What was the purpose of the trip, and what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, so part of our work is really to do outreach to the American people. There's a strong, obviously, bipartisan support of the United States for Israel. But again, it can't just stay at the federal level here in D.C., and we need to get out and meet and work with states and find what's important for them and find ways to cooperate. And so that's why I dedicated these 2 days. You know, there's nothing else going on in the world, but I thought it was really important to go down to West Virginia and have a chance to meet the senior leadership of the state on Tuesday in Charleston and then yesterday at West Virginia University all day in Morgantown.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on campus all day in Morgantown yesterday for a completely different event. We probably passed on I-79 at some point. But
very possibly.
I wish I could have joined you in the trip. You met with Rabbi Victor Yarecki. He is a well-known rabbi here in Charleston, one of the preeminent voices in this state. How was that? And did you guys get a good conversation and a good friendship started?
Listen, like in most cases, you put us together, we could figure out, get three questions, we find the connections and where the family connections are. So that was very quick and rapid in terms of where we overlapped in our educational lives, and because I also grew up here in the United States. But then we sat down, had an excellent meeting with Rabbi Yarecki and along with the mayor of Charleston, and talking about areas that we could possibly cooperate. And it really is great to have such a strong advocate for Israel. So well connected. Every office I went into, they asked me, so have you seen Rabbi Yarecki? And I said, of course, I've met Rabbi Yarecki. So yeah, it was a really great opportunity.
Yeah, and he's a frequent guest of this program. We just love him. And, you know, he leads this interfaith group. It's a group of Jews, Christians, and Muslims in this state that come together and they dine together. They talk about differences. They talk about commonalities. They really want to work together to, you know, eliminate religious bigotry to the extent that it is there, which I don't see it a lot here in this state. But it's really kind of a neat task force, if you will, that they've formed.
Those initiatives are great. I think it's important that they're mirroring what we're seeing happening in the world when it comes to moderate forces, no matter what the faith is. You could see just 15 months ago, the signing of the Abraham Accords, how that's become an opportunity to work together and cooperate. I myself spent my first 3 years of my diplomatic career in Istanbul, working totally connected with multiple communities. And I think it's important that those voices be heard and that we understand there's a tolerance and a commonality in terms of fighting things that cause radicalism and even violence.
I want to talk about something that was very prominent in the last couple of years, and that was Israel's role in COVID-19 and doing research and doing clinical trials and vaccinations. Our COVID-19 czar, Dr. Clay Marsh here in West Virginia, he wouldn't go through a daily briefing without citing what they were doing in Israel. What did Israel do right when it came to COVID-19 that caused so many other states and nations, including the state of West Virginia, to follow their lead?
Well, I think that we had some built-in advantages. Number one is we're a small country. Number two is, in spite of the fact that physically we're not an island, politically we're more or less an island, so we tremendously control our borders and control the flow of people coming in and out. Finally, we have a very centralized healthcare system with very, very, very good data that allows us to reach out, find people, identify them through the various HMOs, the five big HMOs, which includes, by the way, our military, which obviously has many, many customers in that regard. We identified early the potential of the vaccine. We went all in together with Pfizer and then later Moderna in terms of getting people vaccinated and then collecting the data, analyzing it, and get it out there. And I think that was really our greatest achievement.
I'm sorry to ask you such a loaded question with just 30 seconds left, but what's Israel's position on what's going on with Ukraine and what do you recommend be done? I think it's important we address that before we go.
Well, listen, we think this is a horrific development, terrible invasion. I think that we are committed to working together to provide whatever can be done in terms of humanitarian relief, to prevent suffering, to see if there's some way in which we can help, and we stay very engaged politically to try to see if there's a solution to end this situation quickly and to return Ukraine to its full independence and functioning state.
It's been a fascinating conversation. We know this was your first visit to West Virginia this week. Come back, bring your faculty, come your family, come often. We think it's the most beautiful state in the nation. We want to thank Benjamin Krasna. He is the deputy head of mission at the U.S. Embassy with Israel in Washington, D.C. Good to talk to you. Let's have you back on the program again soon. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Inside West Virginia Politics. You can hear more from state, local, and federal lawmakers each and every Sunday morning on WOWK-TV in Charleston, WBOY-TV in Clarksburg, WDVM in the Eastern Panhandle, WTRF in Wheeling, and WVNS in Beckley. You can also find a new episode of the Inside West Virginia Politics podcast right here on this feed every Monday morning. If you like the show, make sure to leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Inside West Virginia Politics is a Nexstar Media Group production, hosted and managed by Mark Curtis. Inside West Virginia Politics is recorded and edited inside the studios of WOWK-TV in Charleston, West Virginia. All rights reserved.